You're listening to the Culture Builders Podcast, where we share thoughts, tools, and tips for leaders to improve relationships, raise standards, and grow personally. We're all about working to do better and to be better. You can learn more at thriveonchallenge.com. So today's conversation is with Jack Fleming, a coach out of Australia, and kind of met Jack about a year ago, just ran across an article that he had written and just really enjoyed it. And since then, I've been following him on Twitter and reading his articles. And, you know, he's a youth coach, coach in Australia at the high school level. That is really just, you know, not only investing in his own growth. Now, he's not investing just tactically and technically, but he's really trying to grow his team culture and try to grow as a leader. But he's not just doesn't just have this growth mindset, but he's actually willing to be vulnerable and share that with others through his articles and share some of his experiences that way. And, you know, he reads a lot and he writes great articles that I enjoy seeing his applications. And it's not just sports books, it's books outside of that. And just I really enjoy seeing how he applies those to his sport, to his coaching. And today's conversation, we're going to kind of dive in a little bit into that about how, you know, he's found just kind of his systems and methods on how he uses the content that he consumes, the podcasts, the articles that he reads, the books that he reads, how he uses that to better himself as a coach. And also he's going to jump in and share some of his experience with working with Mark Bennett of PDS Coaching. If you don't know who Mark Bennett is, check out Coaching Culture episodes with Mark Bennett. Just a phenomenal coaching mentor. And so he's going to kind of share a little bit about that experience as well. So without further ado, we'll jump right into my conversation with Jack Fleming. So Jack, I've honestly been really, really excited about this conversation for quite some time. I think I've followed your blogs, your writing. The first article I stumbled across was, "Are you really a tough coach?" And you know, you got the picture of Tom Izzo on the front of that article there, you know, from that legendary NCAA March Madness game. But you know, that when I read that, I said, "Man, I have some common or shared views with Jack for sure." And so I've just been following your stuff. Absolutely love it. And you know, you coach in Australia. You're a learner. You're active in the coaching community. So I think you're going to have a lot of value to offer other listeners. And honestly, I've got some questions myself of things that I need answered and to learn from. So I'm kind of looking forward to this, man.
Thanks, JP. I'm listening to your podcast for a long time and yeah, really glad to be on. Hopefully we can explore some interesting things in coaching today.
So let's unpack that first article of yours that I read, because I think that might be a really nice place to start to learn a little bit about your perception around good coaching, you know, or even tough coaching. So you wrote this article essentially saying, you know, what's being a tough coach isn't necessarily getting in players' faces and chewing them out. Being a tough coach is probably more of being able to maintain emotional control yourself, be able to coach with intentionality. Like, that's tough because it's not our default response. So tell me a little about this. Was that always your perception of like good coaching and tough coaching, or has that changed over your evolution in your kind of journey as a coach?
Yeah, I think that it definitely wasn't always my perception. My perception of tough coaching was how I was coached, I guess, when I first started. I had some really great, you know, people mm-hmm. who coached me, but there was some, you know, different management of emotions in how they handled themselves. But to come to this point, I think that, like, you know, the job of a coach is to be a great, you know, decision maker, is one big part of that. And you can only do that by managing your emotions. And then for me, like, the ultimate success of a coach is, you know, how much can you get out of the players autonomously without you, and how much can they do in the future when you're not around? So the only way you're going to do that is by, you know, challenging themselves, but also by making sure that they're not constantly relying on you let alone, you know, relying on your emotional outburst as a response. So to me, it's changed a lot along the way, but tough coaching is really more about, you know, allowing people to be the best they can be at this point in time anyway.
So when you, how many years have you been coaching?
I've been coaching for 11 years.
11 years. So
yeah.
11 years ago, you know, what were you like then as compared to now, let's say just on the sidelines during a game?
Well, I think that I was still kind of, I was coaching, but I was still playing at that point. So to me, I wanted to be involved in the game as much as I could, which probably means that I was coaching every pass and every possession at practice and the game, which was my perception of what coaching was. And then a few years down the line, I probably went too far the other way where I wasn't maybe managing the group enough or doing enough. So now I've kind of tried to find the balance where, you know, I'm trying to manage my emotional state to make the best decisions for the group, but also understanding how to get the best out of each and every player that hopefully gets the best out of the team.
Yeah, let's explore something you just said there. One of the things you just said was you kind of went, you know, you kind of seesawed. You know, that's kind of what I'm hearing is that you were like really involved, joystick coaching, really loud to not managing the game enough. Common trap, probably fell into it this year. Explain that.
So this is probably I got really into researching around, you know, guided discovery learning and, you know, exploratory learning for athletes and, you know, that kind of realm of them figuring it out themselves. And having a look at my own coaching, I was really on the other end of, you know, over delivering and over accounting. But then I sort of, I got confused about my role, you know, where I was, I didn't know when to step in. I felt like I understepped. So to my point now, I'm hoping that, you know, my job in the game is to really, you know, use both sides of that to get the best out of each and every player. But then at practice, I kind of find myself more as a facilitator to really challenge them. And for those who have listened to JP's podcast with Mark Bennett, that rule of three has become a really good, you know, a really good guide in when to step in and when not to, because I did definitely go too far on the silent end, I felt, at some point in time.
Mm. And I want to explore that later with you because I think that's an important piece. But I just think back even just this last weekend, we played a game on Saturday and I had players give me feedback, which I asked for intentionally. And they said, we need you more involved. You know, essentially I went under coaching and I haven't coached in 5 years because I've been doing all this stuff with TOC. But the last games I coached, I tried to coach my team this season, like the last few games I coached of my previous team, which was in the playoffs late in the season. And at that stage, I probably could step back more, be less vocal, use more questions, because we all understood, we're bought in, we're locked in, and I had empowered the players to speak up. Whereas this is new for these players. They are very uncomfortable by me asking them questions. They're only focused on answering the right way, or at least the right way of what they think I want to hear. And they really do need and rely on a coach that is vocal on the sidelines, which I have been for years, so I can easily step up and do that. And so it's kind of this journey this season, I feel like, to first step in and be who they need me to be while also taking steps backwards progressively over the course of the season to allow them to take more of that, you know, role in making decisions. You know, I think that's kind of what I'm looking at here as my situation.
Yeah, I've definitely been there too. And I actually remember we did a task with one of my teams maybe 3 years ago called the Circle of Truth, where each player and coach would sit in the chair in front of the room, and players would go around and ask what they want to see more of their teammates and their coach. And I got the same response. They wanted more feedback or more, more coaching, essentially, is what they said. If I could have my time back, I would hope to be strong enough in my response that while they might feel that they need that, we don't want to become reliant on that. And it wasn't my answer at the time, but I'd hope that I'd have the strength now to sort of say that, it's a progressive process, but we don't want you to be relying on me, even though that might be our perception of what coaching is most of the time.
Yes, I would agree 100%. So on Sunday, after I got that feedback, the next day we had another friendly scrimmage, and I communicated to the team that, yes, I would be stepping up. I was going to be taking their feedback on. At the same time, I challenged them with this. I said, don't come to the bench and say, man, we need to do more of this or we need to do more of that, if you haven't actually been communicating it on the court. For instance, we were not switching hard on our ball screens the day before. Players like, we're not switching hard on the ball screens. Well, it's like you come to the bench and say that, but are you actually communicating that on the court? So that was my one little challenge to them, is if you're seeing it, say something and use that through the form of reminders. You know, we talk about ERN, encouragement, reminders, notifications, and it's great to be a cheerleader, but you got to move past that. You got to be given information beforehand and after the fact as well. So I think that's where I've tried to, just even this last weekend, maybe fell into the similar trap that you did, and I'm trying to improve on that.
Yeah, I think coming out of this, I'd like to do a better job of, selling the value of, great teams can adapt live in the moment. And the more we can do that out on the court, that's going to be our vision at the end of the season. How much can we do that without coach? Because we don't have unlimited timeouts, and we can't save every scenario. So I think that that's a great conversation to have with your team.
Let's dive a little bit into the rule of three, because you've been working with Mark Bennett and he's been helping you as a coach. One thing that, I'd love to know a little bit about that experience, but I think one thing just kind of following up from this conversation is when it comes to the rule of three, I feel like maybe I've come at it from the, okay, let's go rule one, let's go rule two, let's go through rule three. Whereas I actually feel like I'm doing it in reverse. Like I'm coming in, I'm correcting, but then I'm trying to, start with coach interventions and then encourage player interventions within each other or self interventions. Whereas I think initially when I was trying to, I was like, all right, I'm just going to completely step back, which I think is what we've been talking about. But I think for me, the rule of three is probably done in reverse is probably what I feel like my team has needed at this point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sort of. Do you mind giving an example?
So for instance, let's say in trainings, we're having a session and in a certain phase of that practice, I probably initially said, right from the beginning, I want them to set the success criteria. And that's just a great one right there. Letting them set the success criteria for a drill that they actually don't know and an offensive style of play that they don't know. It's like, it's really hard, It's like, well, we've never done this drill before. We've never done this. So how would they know what excellence looks like? You have to start with just kind of like an organizational element, I think, but also like, and that's just one great example. And then once you've done that, so I have to start setting the success criteria. And then after they get familiar with it, then they're able to say from training to training, oh, we've done that before. This is what excellence would look like. This is what the next step would look like. But I have to first come in and try to paint a picture of what that success looks like from the beginning. That I would say that's probably my first example.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I think back to talking about, you know, exploratory learning or guided discovery without any base knowledge, that is, you know, useless. So yeah, when your team is, you know, getting something new, yeah, you have to be the, you know, the teacher at the front, setting the table. And then as time progresses, you're right, that's kind of where it goes. But it is such a fine balance at the start where you're not really sure, which is a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough. So what's that experience been like, you know, working with Mark? You know, just investing the time and the money for that type of feedback and coaching.
Extremely uncomfortable, but so rewarding. You know, Mark, he doesn't miss a thing. And you know, I would get nervous before the Skypes because I'd watched my own video, written my own notes, and I knew that if there was any, you know, any gray areas or anything that I was being vague with, he was gonna challenge in a positive way. So, but there was so much growth in the point that it was really simple, you know, like for a whole process of 3 to 4 weeks, it was get the rule of three right, set the success criteria, and I wasn't worried about anything else going to practice. And knowing that I was going to be back on the Skype with him a week later talking about it, I knew I had the support there, but I didn't have to focus about anything else. And I think that was the real big takeaway from me, and the value of a mentor that's not going to let you, you know, wander and just talk about everything. That's where I really got massive value for me.
And so where would you say after that process, you are now better as a coach? You know, like how have you become better?
I think my use of the rule of three is a lot more skilled, like, and I'm still so early in the process, but I think I understand now a little bit more where I need to spend more time stepping in and, you know, being vocal and being directive, and then when I need to step away, where maybe the group spend more time on a certain, you know, drill or activity and they're comfortable in it. So just my, you know, read of when to step in and when not, I've become a lot more comfortable with that. That was really difficult at the beginning, I felt.
So can you give kind of an example of maybe where you're stepping in and how you're stepping in differently?
Yeah, definitely. I think it really starts with having a clear, having clear priorities or having clear success criteria. If that's vague, then you're going to have, you know, real trouble with your group being able to hold each other accountable or, you know, encourage and remind each other. So the first point would be, you know, just start with one or two things that are, you know, your priorities for that phase of practice, and be really clear in your language with the group. So that was a good starting point for me. You know, I might say that we're playing, you know, one-on-one, and our success criteria for the defense is just to have a hand above the ball and box out on the shot. And those were the two things that the group was looking for. And then if there was anything else outside of that, my job was not to step in as much as needed. Maybe if it was a huge, you know, if it was disrupting practice or it was a real problem, but I was really going to keep my focus there. And then now my job is to track or, you know, scan, is Mark's word that he likes to use, for those two things only. And, you know, I see it, I'm waiting, you know, has anybody else stepped in to help that teammate if they haven't recognized themselves? And then now's my time to, you know, use a question, or if I think it's necessary, be directive. And that's that rule of three. But it is, you know, really challenging, and you got to be, you know, on your game in terms of what you're watching for at practice.
So when you're playing, say, one-on-one, you might have players at multiple baskets playing one-on-one. You're stepping back, you're scanning the entire court. You've set success criteria of, you know, hands above the ball, you got to finish with the box out. What is is that a whole team intervention because people are at different baskets? Like, what does that look like in a moment where you're like, wow, that group over there, they're not meeting the success criteria? What does that look like when you intervene in a one-on-one game?
I think in that scenario, it would be an individual intervention. Whether that is, we really worked at with my group, the review process. So I could just say, Ben, let's just review that last, let's just review that last possession. And then Ben would go through the process of, what did I see? What were my choices? And then, did I stick the ball or did I box out? What would I do next time? With a review, it's really important for me that I was going to keep that athlete on task. If we didn't have time for that, then maybe I might say, Ben, we need to see the box out on the next one. But just really dependent on the situation. But it would be an individual review instead of a group one, I would say, for the most part in that scenario.
Yeah, one of the things I found really effective in those, especially when you have groups of two or three and they're at a separate basket, is to oftentimes go to their teammate. So if the one player has a defense and they're not, in your example, not having their hand at a certain thing or not boxing out, go to their teammate and say, all right, last possession, how do you think, Jack did, And that's kind of probably one of the more effective ways that I've done that.
That's a great one because that the whole rule of three is a skill for your whole team, and you definitely do have to get it out of them. Teammates helping each other, and everyone does it differently. Some are just going to yell it out, and then others don't feel comfortable doing that. But that's a great point that you've really got to upskill and help your players and make sure they're comfortable doing that in the process.
Yeah. One of my big concerns with my team is that certain personalities struggle to give feedback. And I think it's just a piece of a culture in here. We've got players that have been playing 20 years within the club. They're 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 years of age. And it's kind of this, I have for 20 years not called my teammate out on certain things, You're trying to get over that. I feel like some of this isn't just a system for on the court or on the field. It has to be developing the culture off the field or off the pitch to create safety where people feel like they can give feedback and she's not going to hold it against her after the training.
Definitely. And it's definitely not always a negative. There's the accountability is also about when things go really well and, you want to acknowledge your teammates doing that. And that can be a great starting point for people on the journey for the athletes is starting with the cheerleading or the encouragement. And then progressing to, hey, we need to take this further if our team's going to go to the next level,
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So definitely an uncomfortable process, and I think it was probably cut a little short by COVID with working with Mark, and hopefully you'll be picking it back up soon enough, hopefully, right?
Yeah. We've got a bit more time to go, so I'm looking forward to it.
Now, which teams are you coaching currently in Australia?
So I did have an under-14 boys club team. Mm-hmm. This year, and I also coach at a high school, and then next season I'll also have an under 16 state team, which we play in like a one-off national tournament in 2021.
Great. You spend a lot of time reading. You kind of seem to read a lot. You write some blogs, which I'll definitely post a link to, because I genuinely think they're some of the best blogs out there when it comes to coaching and learning. I thoroughly enjoy them. I think they're insightful. I think you do a really good job of taking things, even non-sport books, and applying those principles to coaching, to sports, which I think is unique. So you've been on this journey to learn and grow as a coach. First off, before we go into that process and what that looks like for you, what kind of fueled you on this journey? Like, not every coach out there is like this invested in learning and growing, and you seem to be pretty amped up about it.
Well, there was a certain, you know, time in my life where I was coaching, but I wasn't, I guess, maybe invested off the floor. And my first year out of high school, I was doing law and international studies at university, but I did find myself watching coaching clinics during some of those lectures by the end of the year. So that kind of made me realize that, you know, maybe this wasn't, you know, my path. So I did transfer and end up doing a degree where I was majoring in sports coaching. And that commitment was a big deal. You know, it was a big deal to transfer courses and change, you know, my whole path after high school. So that point right there, I decided if I'm going to change paths and I'm going to commit, you know, the time to it to improve and be as best as I can, because as we all know, you know, there's only so many jobs in coaching, and if you want to be, if you want to survive, and then you're going to be, have to be pretty good. So I guess that was a starting point for where I realized that I'm going to try and commit as much as I can and get the best out of myself if I'm going to do it full time.
Love that. And so you, I would say you probably consume a large amount of content, but you probably do it not just in, you know, you're watching clinic after clinic. I don't imagine you watched 50 hours of clinics over the pandemic. Maybe you did, but tell a little bit about how you decide what you will invest your time in, like how you will decide this is the next book I'm going to read, or I'm going to attend this clinic and I'm not going to attend this clinic. I'm not going to listen to this podcast, but I am going to listen to this podcast, because I think there's so much information out there. We can just feel like we have to consume it all. So how do you first make that decision on what you will consume?
Definitely. I think it goes through different stages. Like when you first start, I was just going to do what I was interested in, and that was, you know, a good starting point. But now there's so much information out there, and COVID was an overload. So I always try and, you know, a crazy overload. I always try and, you know, just send my attention in one direction or two. So with my reading, I've been reading a lot about, you know, sort of teaching methodology, and sort of though that's sort of been my focus for the last sort of couple of months, as like a general area. And then with basketball, I started off like everybody, I was watching, you know, probably too many, and then I sort of chose one area of the game that I was going to direct my attention to. And yeah, I would just, if I could suggest anything, it would be, yeah, just narrow your focus to one part of coaching that's relevant to you. So I'm going into a new head coaching position where it's going to be important for me to manage a staff and, you know, lead something that's a little bit, you know, bigger than I have before. Mm-hmm. So I was really looking for, you know, clinics on leading a program and managing a staff and podcasts around that. So yeah, if I could suggest anything, it would be pick one or two things.
So you pick one or two things, but it's not just read the book. It's not just watch the clinic. It's not just listen to the podcast for you. What's next after you've chosen to consume something?
Well, I mean, I'm a big note taker by hand. That's kind of how I like to listen, or, you know, write as I go. And then one of my next steps, not all the time, but would be to write an article, because this is a big process for me in synthesizing my ideas and connecting it to other parts of what I've learned in the past. And I would recommend, you know, whether you write things down or you write articles by yourself, it's just a great way to, you know, connect ideas and make them your own. So yeah, I would say, you know, while I'm listening, it would then be writing notes, and then it would then be going towards connecting towards an article, or editing a part of my own sort of coaching thoughts if I think that it's, you know, that valuable.
Yeah, no, I love that. Just interviewed Adam Hanover. He's in the Boxing Coaches podcast, and I remember talking with Adam years ago, and I had, you know, I had encouraged him. He's sitting on his journey, like, go create something. Like, go take what you're learning and create something. It's like, it doesn't matter if people read it. It doesn't matter if people listen to it. It's just the fact that you're taking something and you have to be able to articulate it yourself. Helps you to learn it, helps you learn how to apply it. I think there's a lot of things that I've helped coaches implement over the last 5 years. And if I was fully transparent, yes, some of those things have come from my own experiences or seeing other coaches and what works for them. But I honestly think some of the most effective things that we've done as far as implementations around how to run their program, their culture, you know, improve that, their leadership, it's come from studying and reading and learning books and podcasts and articles outside of sports, you know, and just trying to craft and see what that looks for us. And I think that's a really unique thing, and it's been very effective in a lot of ways. So I just can't encourage coaches enough, not just to take good notes, but, you know, so often I think people underline, maybe they take notes and then it just goes back on the shelf. You know, so you have to have a system where you take all that and you try to articulate it. And I just finished Range by David Epstein. And it was like, I had that light bulb moment where I totally connected that. Like, it's like staying within our sport, staying within sports in specifically isn't going to help us as much as moving outside of our sport. I think a lot of people might be critical of that, being like, well, what, you know, what does Navy SEALs have to, you know, teach us about running this? Or what does, you know, some business, you know, Amazon, what does that have to teach us about how they run their business? You know, but you can make those connections as Epstein, you know, shows in the book, and it can be really, really valuable.
And the thing with taking something outside your sport is you really have to make it your own, because you're forced to by the context, you know, like mm-hmm. You have to take that. How does that fit into who I have and what I'm doing? So I think that's another reason why it can really, you know, be a game changer. And you do have to have the base knowledge of your, you know, sport or whatever, that's important. But then, you know, there's only so much you can read about your sport. So yeah, that's where some really great ideas can come from if you can make them your own.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's tough, I think, if we only focus on mimicking other coaches, like the coaches that we work for, the coaches we see, or we see Brad Stevens. I think that's really hard.
And just because somebody coaches the best team or they have the best record, I don't think it always means that that's the best method of doing things. And often it can be the worst, like the person who maybe as a coach has that natural charisma or that player who is just a genetic freak, just because they, you know, stand on a Swiss ball and do squats doesn't mean it's going to be the best training method for the 12-year-old athlete out there. And I think that's the same for coaches. You know, don't just buy into what the best person is doing, because it might not be the best thing for you or the best thing for everybody.
So you choose your content very intentionally. You have a very well-defined and intentional reflection process. How do you then take that and apply it? Because I think the application, this is where some coaches also struggle. They read the book in the off season. They're like, oh yes, that's great. And then they try to go apply it and they expect it to work on the first go. And it's like, you know, well, I had a great plan. Well, so often I think the plan that we start with, we need to start with the plan, but that's not the plan that's going to get us there. And we have to constantly be adapting. So what's your process for applying some of the stuff that you learn and take in?
Well, I guess, I mean, my high school coaching setting is an arena where there's not really much competition. So I do use that as a bit of a science experiment a lot of the time in terms of trialing things out. So I think if you have the time and place, whether you just have a once a week session where you have beginners or, you know, something where you have a space where you can try things, I think that's a great place to start. And then you're really just going on that process of, you know, try, evaluate, adjust, and, you know, keep continuing until it becomes something that you like. But yeah, I would agree that, you know, you got to have some sort of stick with itness, you know, and then ability to adjust on the fly and, you know, constantly make iterations until it becomes your own and works for you and your context.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. That's a great point. It's constantly about the modifying and making the changes. I think that's, and understanding how the guy next to you did it is not going to be the way that it's going to work for you. So that's great. I think too, it's also, I remember this question that I was asked once, and it was, if you knew you couldn't lose, how would you coach? Like, would you coach differently? And I'm like, I think that's where I've had some of my greatest growth, is where I said, hey, I'm going to coach the eighth grade team while I also had my high school team. I'd say, I'll go coach the eighth grade team in the off season. I'd start experimenting and trying things out. And, you know, I'd love to say that I could have that mindset with my competitive team, but that's not realistic. You know, like, that competitive team is, you know, part of the culture and part of the buy-in is that we feel like we're preparing to win, you know, for competition. And if you just approach, if I walked in today and just said, yeah, I'm going to try out some new stuff, you know, and we've got our first league opener on Saturday, that's not a realistic ask. That's not a fair ask of my players. Like, oh, hey, let's all just learn together, try out new things. Like, you got to sometimes stick with what you know is somewhat effective in certain situations. So I think, like you said there, finding a lab where we can experiment, that's huge.
Yeah. And I think that's where you might see at the top level, you know, those great coaches, they're still looking to get better, but they're going to do what they know they can do well in their competition, just like you would expect a player to. You know, they're going to play and coach to their strengths and keep looking to innovate and improve along the way. But yeah, you, in the end, when it gets to the real stuff, you've got to, you know, do what you know you can do well.
Yeah, that's great. Kind of want to finish up on this last topic. Gonna maybe, you know, you can kind of ask for a little bit of vulnerability, and you can get as deep into this pool as you want. You can put both feet in, one foot in, you can jump in. But what's the hardest thing in coaching for you? Like, what's the biggest challenge and struggle you face as a coach?
I think you just said it. Vulnerability. if I could describe myself 8 or 9 years ago, it would be the coach who comes in and sits on the other side of the bench away from the players until 5:30 when practice starts, and then my job starts. So I guess, you know, I'm probably naturally, I wouldn't want to say this, but naturally introverted to some respect, where the, you know, relationship building has been a challenge for me. So I've really had to work at that part of it, you know, individual conversations and, you know, being vulnerable through my own coaching is a part that, you know, and we talked about this a little bit, like, I have to schedule them in my calendar or else I will skip them. So, you know, I've had seasons where I've skipped those conversations and let things fester underneath the waters, and, you know, problems have built up just because of my ability to avoid, you know, those hard conversations. So I've really worked at, you know, they're not a hard conversation. They're an important conversation to have. And just trying to change my mindset around those, you know, those critical conversations has been something that has been, you know, has held me back, I feel like, in my coaching at certain times.
Mm. Do you think that scheduling these one-on-ones, these player interactions, do you think that makes it less effective? Like, it's, you know, so intentional that it's, you know, does that take away from the effectiveness? I've heard that some coaches are resistant to checklists, to checking with players, because they don't feel like it's authentic, is the word that I think they often use.
I can understand that. I still think the conversation can be organic, but I just like to be intentional in making sure that it happens. It doesn't necessarily mean that you got to be in the office, you know, with the door shut and a formal setting and the table in between you. But it just means for me, I know on that day that I'm going to have 5 minutes with that player about this issue, or maybe about anything. So I can understand the perspective, but I still don't think that needs to be a really formal event. You know, I just think that for me, it's helped me organize and do the things that I sometimes avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I would 100% agree with you. I just feel exactly the same way. It can be an organic conversation. It doesn't need you need to come in with this agenda for every one-on-one. Though I think it is helpful to sometimes come in with some clear and purpose, as I'm about to, the next 2 days, tackle one-on-ones with every player to discuss their role, to discuss their minutes, you know? So I think that I have a very clear few questions. I want to come in with that. And then I also want to leave room for it to be somewhat of an organic conversation. But I think this is really, really important stuff that you just kind of shared there. And I love, you know, that I think is a struggle for a lot of coaches is to be vulnerable. Just hearing what you said there has kind of challenged me. I got some hard feedback from some players this morning, and it's kind of been something I've been mulling over. And I don't want to be defensive of that feedback, or just even feedback about me. It's just more of their concerns kind of going into our first game of the weekend. But I think it'd be great to potentially share a little bit of vulnerability about how, you know, that kind of just open up like, hey, that was tough. That was tough to hear, you know, like rather than just like, oh, that's great. Great feedback. Thanks. Thumbs up, you know, pal, you know, like I think that isn't exactly how I feel and being able to articulate that I think could create maybe an opportunity for us to have a bit more of a authentic, actual conversation. So I appreciate your perspective.
I think sometimes, you know, that vulnerability is usually rewarded whenever it's said in front of a team because people, you know, get a deeper understanding of your perspective, but sometimes it comes too late because we wait until everything goes wrong and then we're going to put things on the table when, you know, maybe we have to, you know, not force, but challenge ourselves to get that out because we might be able to see the rewards before, you know, before something, you know, negative happens, or, you know, we might be able to see the fruits of our labor if we step up, but it doesn't mean that it's easy for anybody. And that, you know, can really help us get into the mind of a player when they're being coached too.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. Well, is there anything that you didn't share today that you just felt like, man, I'd love to share? Or that was a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, mate. I would share one thing that I've done that I think could be really helpful for coaches is pick 5 or 6 people from your life and ask them what you think your unique abilities are. I can't remember what book I stole this from, but it was a really good insight. You know, I picked my parents and then a few people from my coaching world and then a couple of my closest friends. And this really helped me gain perspective and, you know, what my strengths are. And it wasn't specific to being a coach, but I think it, you know, you have to get outside your own eyes. And sometimes to seek perspective of your own strengths was a really, really worthwhile exercise for me. And I think it would be worthy for anyone to try.
No, I have actually, I wonder what book that's from, because my mentor, you know, 5, 6 years ago, Jamie Gilbert, challenged me with the same activity. He had me go to 5 or 10 people and say, what about me moves the needle? You know, like, what do I bring to the table? Which I did not want to do because I felt like I was fishing for a compliment. And then he met a couple weeks later and he said, did you do it? I said, no. And he's like, why not? And I was like, well, I feel like I'm fishing for a compliment. And he's like, but if someone came to you and asked you that question, how would you feel? I was like, oh, I'd love to actually share what I love about Jack. You know, I'd love to share what I love about this person or how they move the needle for me. So that question challenged me. And so then I went in the next week and I texted and sent emails to a family member, work colleagues, players, students, you know, picked 10 people. And the feedback was, we like coming to talk with you. We feel like you always have great advice. You know, you know, we even a couple of students were like, we love when you share and you open up. And I probably would, it was more of the guided discovery coach. I didn't like to lecture much. And they're like, no, we you know, your teacher, like, they like, we really do like it when you do give like kind of a bit of a lecture sometimes, you know? And that is why I started TOC, or that's how it kind of organically happened. You know, it was like, I was already writing at the time. It's like, okay, maybe I can support coaches in this way. So it's just kind of that very activity, was very transformational for me. So I think that's awesome that you suggested that. So that's a big challenge for coaches, I think, that are listening to this, is to go out there and ask around. You know, because I think there's certain things that we know are our strengths, but you'll uncover some things about ourselves that I think we sometimes miss. So I appreciate that.
No, what your podcast does, JP, is, you know, it helps coaches on so many different levels that aren't often discussed. But in the end, we're all going to have to step into the fire at some point, and we've got to be, you know, really aware of, you know, how good we truly can be and what our strengths are. And we can only do that by seeking outside perspective. So I think that, you know, it can really, you know, really serve confidence in tough times.
Well, Jack, thanks so much for the conversation. What's your Twitter handle? What's your website or the Medium website link? So coaches can start reading your stuff and following you on Twitter, because you make really insightful posts as well.
Yeah, my new website is coachjackfleming.com. So that's got, I'm in the process of putting all the articles on there, but there's more than 100 articles on there or so. And then my Twitter is at @Jack_Fleming1. So yeah, if you have any questions or, you know, happy to talk coaching, please reach out.
Thanks to Jack for coming onto the podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to share it. Give Jack a follow, give him a shout. Definitely check out some of his articles. There is so much good stuff in there. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and also check out some more of our stuff at thriveonchallenge.com. We got articles there, the other podcast, Coaching Culture. Probably worth a listen if you enjoy the type of stuff that we discussed today. And that's it. Thanks so much again for listening in.